Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Thank you for joining us once again. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, even though this is West Coast Bias. Whoever has that Gmail, just give it up, all right? Just give it up. I know you're not doing anything with it. Gift us.
They're not.
Huh? No, they're not. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. I probably should. All right, we've got fringe teams. We've got home run records, buyers and sellers, trade deadline action, trivia, more, much more.
Yes, of course. But of course, we still have 4 days until the deadline. So as what is seeming to be a tradition here, I'm sure most of the big blockbuster moves will happen shortly after we finish recording here.
Sure. Oh, yeah, definitely. I wouldn't have it any other way.
We'll have to do an update post deadline just to review all the damage.
Ooh, it's coming up. We're going to get into that. But for now, let's raise a glass. Let's tip a hat. Let's give a fond farewell to Mr. Triple T himself.
Triple T.
Trevor Tulowitzki.
Trevor is his middle name.
That's
awesome. Tulo. I'll miss him. He was frustrating to watch if you're not a Rockies fan.
Pure West Coast, though. West Coast all the way. I mean, I know the last 2.5 seasons or so, he's been in the American League East, but...
And mostly injured.
You're right, exactly. So, but for all intents and purposes, he is a West Coaster,
yes,
for sure. And he's a local boy. I mean, look, he's originally from Santa Clara, graduated from Fremont High School in Sunnyvale, went to Long Beach State. And he is a hell of a 13 years. As a big leaguer, I mean, he was solid. He was tough. He was tough to be against. Yeah,
definitely the best defensive
shortstop.
Oh, no doubt.
He just
crushed the ball whenever I saw him.
Oh, yeah.
At AT&T Park, it didn't intimidate him. He could hit home runs.
5-time All-Star. Yeah. 2-time Gold Glove Award winner. I'm surprised he's only 2-time Gold Glove, honestly. But, and a 2-time Silver Slugger. Yeah, he was solid. He's going to finish his career with a 290. 361, 495 slash line with makes 856 OPS.
Not too bad.
225 homers, 780 ribbies, 762 runs, and 57 stolen bases. He's finishing with a 44.2 WAR, which, you know, it's respectable. It's not Hall of Fame. He didn't have a long enough career, but hey, if you can finish 290, especially when the last 2 or 3 seasons you're hitting under 250, you know, that's pretty damn good.
It's a little bit surprising, though. It seemed to come out of seemingly nowhere. It's a little surprising that he isn't finishing off the season with the Yankees.
Right.
Who have a legitimate shot at making it to the World Series.
That is true. It is kind of surprising, actually. You would think you would kind of just do anything you can to stay on a team that's that highly touted as being, obviously, a postseason contender, but probably, maybe, let's say, a American League pennant winner.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you think perhaps the Yankees asked him to retire early.
That's interesting.
If he approached them, say, I'm retiring at the end of the year, it's my last season. Didi Gregorius is back. The trade deadline is looming. Perhaps maybe they encouraged him, well, can you retire early?
Oh, you think
he was
traded?
Well, no, I don't think he'd necessarily be traded. I think maybe he is clearing a roster spot so someone can come in.
Put him out to pasture. Yeah, that's kind of a shame. You would think, though, he would figure out some kind of role, just stay on that team. But maybe he just really doesn't want to win a World Series with an American League team. I get it. He's a National Leaguer.
Perhaps, but as a Yankee, it would be pretty, something most people dream about.
The Yankee streak will end this year. They're not going to get a World Series ring, and their streak of World Series every decade will be no more. But you would think that you would want to try for it, maybe. But I don't know. Anyway, will the Rockies extend him a one-day contract so as to be able to retire as a Rocky? Or do you think that'll have to wait till next year? But or is that even going to happen? Because he's done. He said he retired.
I don't know. I mean, usually when these contracts happen, a player doesn't necessarily even have to play.
Right.
They just sort of show up there.
That's true.
Say hello for the camera, smile, wave the local media, and then that's about it.
Yeah, just a ceremonious kind of offering there. Well, as is tradition, if there's a Dodger game on in the background, they start to blow it whilst recording this podcast. And it was a hell of a pitcher's duel. Strasburg was perfect through five, and Buehler had given up two, or one, I should say. Well, it was a two-run shot to Dozier, and it was looking close, and now it's not. But do you know what happened on this day in 1991? July 28th, 1991. Speaking of perfect.
Well, I remember that day. I imagine someone threw a perfect game.
Indeed. That was Dennis Martinez with the Expos pitching the 13th perfect game in Major League Baseball history against the Dodgers in Dodger Stadium. It's a 2-1 win. Yeah, and you know, obviously that made him the first pitcher born outside of the U.S. to pitch a perfect game. And it's pretty magical. El Presidente. Right?
El Presidente, yes.
Yeah.
I remember Dennis Martinez for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but the weird thing is, though, that 2 days before that, Mark Gardner no-hit the Dodgers through nine innings, but lost, ultimately, the no-hitter and eventually the game in the 10th. The Expos could have been the first team to throw a perfect game and a no-hitter in the same series.
That would have been quite a feat.
Would have been pretty insane. I mean, in 1917, the St. Louis Browns had two no-hitters in the same series on consecutive days, May 5th and 6th, Ernie Koob and Bob Groom.
Wow.
Yeah.
1917, more than 100 years since that has happened.
And they did it against the eventual World Series champions, the White Sox. Comiskey's White Sox and... it wasn't going to be good. Two years later, it was going to get a little dicey.
I was going to say, that story
is bad. Pay your players, Comiskey, you cheap bastard. Making your players launder their own clothes. What do you think's going to happen? Anyway, Dodger Stadium, the site of Sandy Koufax's perfect game in 1965, became the first stadium to witness two perfect games. Now, it's happened since with three different stadiums. Name one stadium.
Name one stadium where a perfect game has happened twice.
Since.
Yankee Stadium?
Yes, sir.
All right.
All right. There you go. I was going to give you the strike sound, but I thought, hey, you got it.
I figured that was a safe guess. I'm not sure of the other two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got Oakland Coliseum and Safeco Field.
Ah, so a little Safeco.
Very West Coast biased, and that's I guess it's not Safeco anymore. I guess it's T-Mobile. Is that right? T-Mobile Park.
T-Mobile Park. Yeah.
Yeah, not Starbucks grounds.
It's definitely not. Is definitely not the King Dome anymore. But
no. Well, this you were actually talking about next year's All-Star Game. Speaking of...
I ran across a story that the Dodgers announced that they're going to be doing a $100 million facelift to Dodger Stadium. It is the third oldest stadium in the league.
And no, in baseball. In all of
baseball. In baseball. In the majors.
LA is no stranger to facelifts. So
no, it's definitely it's true Hollywood fashion. They're going to this is in advance of the All-Star Game, which they also unveiled the logo for the 2020 All-Star Game. Looks pretty nice.
Yeah.
And I guess they're going to be building a plaza out in the center field area that will include a food court, beer gardens, and retail opportunities. A big sort of gathering point. Also, they're going to add efficiencies for ingress and egress of the actual stadium. In all points, especially from the center field area, which I guess is where the majority of the parking lot is.
Yes.
I
don't know about this retail space area. I don't know how I feel about that.
Be a community gathering point. Encourage people to get to the park a little bit earlier. Beat the traffic. Get in before the first
There is
pitch.
No beating the traffic on game day in LA. I don't know if you've been to Dodger Stadium.
I have yet to be to Dodger Stadium.
What?
Really?
This is West Coast bias? You've never been to Dodger Stadium?
I've never been to Dodger Stadium.
Wow.
I have not found myself in LA during baseball season.
How do you sleep at night?
You know, sometimes not very well, but I don't think it's because I've never been to Dodger Stadium, but maybe it is.
I mean, you know, maybe. I don't know. Well, anyway, there is never a good time
to get
there.
I understand.
You got to give yourself 2 hours.
There's only one way in, one way out, and sort of.
Kind of.
And I did not see anything in this plan, $100 million to ease that portion of it. It seems like that would be
again. Requires like Elon Musk. Like that's not $100 million. Like that's going to take way more than $100 million.
It's possible that you're right, but it seems like something for the All-Star Game where you're going to get a lot of interest from people who aren't necessarily Dodgers fans and know the routine.
Oh yeah, they'll be in for a rude awakening.
I think you are in for it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Be worse, but I guess this is the third All-Star Game that Dodger Stadium has hosted. But it's been a while.
They still observe the designated hitter, though, correct, at the All-Star Game?
I am unsure about that.
I mean, I guess most pitchers aren't going to be around for that many innings, or even three innings, maybe.
But. Right. Probably none will have a opportunity to hit anyway. They'll get pinch hit for if it's not an actual designated hitter. So.
Right. Yeah, so I guess, it's basically
the same thing. Might
as well do. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, yeah. No, that's gonna be fun. I'm definitely gonna go to that. Make it a whole weekend thing. Do a home run derby there. Would be pretty sweet. You know, I still think that we need to take a cue from Korea and Japan when we're talking about All-Star Week and have other things than
skills competitions.
Yeah. Let's have some skills competitions. Let's have
more than just
a
the
bunting
home run hitting contest.
Yeah. Set up a couple buckets behind the mound or left and right. Whoever can bunt the most balls in 2 minutes or.
Yeah,
speed competition running, inside the park home run speed. Like, let's see that, not everybody has to do it, but like, let's highlight guys like Billy Hamilton who are never going to hit more than 5 home runs in a season or hell even hit 250 in a season. but like, I want to see him on an all out sprint, or have like a ball machine just launching balls or, I don't know, something cool. Clayton Kershaw's famous warm up routine. He does like a soft touch toss. And then a long toss, and then a super long toss. And he starts throwing from the warning track to home plate. Like, that's how he gets warmed up. I would love to see Puig or Laureano, do something like that. Like, throw the ball from the warning track to the plate, whoever gets closest on one bounce.
Yeah.
Right to third or something. Yeah, that'd be super cool. I don't know, something. Give me something other than just home run derby. It's fine. Home run derby's great. And the All-Star Game is cool. But, something, right?
You miss an opportunity. All those players marveling at the home runs, they all are there because they're all-stars. They have some skills. Let's see if we can get something to highlight those that aren't just the big sluggers.
Right, I think so. I mean, I remember Arenado even was talking about having an idea like for third baseman, like throwing from third base to first from your knees, throwing from third base to first base from your butt, you know, and see who can be most accurate, who can get, you know, the quickest kind of thing. I don't know. I think that'd be really fun to watch.
Yeah.
I think in Korea they have, like, during the All-Star game, they wear, like, costumes. Like,
I saw that video. They're coming out dressed all sorts of different ways. Cosplay.
Fancy. How fancy.
Cosplay. It really does give an opportunity for the players to show their personality more so than, you know, like the Ken Griffey Jr. statement of, I'm going to wear my cap backwards. And that was a really big deal.
That was a big deal. That was way before let the kids play. That irked more than a few fans, I'm sure, or old timers, let's say.
Yeah.
Now, look, I just want to get right into this because I feel like it's very pertinent. It is time sensitive. But should fringe teams be buyers? You have three more days. I'm looking at you, Indians, D-backs, obviously the Giants, because they've been on a tear lately. But look, I'm not a Giants fan, and I hope you guys don't get rid of anybody, because it would be in everybody else on the West Coast's best interest if you didn't have a fresh stock of young talent.
Sure.
Which you kind of seem to already do right now. I mean, the team now is definitely not the team it was April 1st, right?
No, that's true.
But I don't know. Like, and obviously, I live in San Francisco, so I've just been hearing this nonstop. Like, don't trade Bumgarner, don't trade Smith, blah, 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 blah. Like, just all this pure emotion and no real sense of rationality. Am I wrong here? Like, what's
really interesting, I think, is that either way you argue it, you'll be right. And that is the dilemma of being one of these fringe teams, is especially now without the second trade deadline.
Right.
That this new hard trade deadline, you got to know now in 4 days. The Giants have two more games before the trade deadline. The trade deadline being July 31st at 1 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time.
So they have to make a decision now, basically.
They pretty much. I think the outcome of the game that they're currently playing in San Diego will determine a lot about the fate of Madison Bumgarner,
right,
or Will Smith.
Now, sitting here with a purported Giants fan, you are wearing black and orange currently.
I am.
What do you want to see happen? Just the look on your face. I know this isn't a video podcast, but the look on your face and the severe teenage girl eye roll right there was pretty epic.
It's
a tough choice, I'm sure.
It really is, because as a fan, I want them to win. I want them to do everything they can to win. Intellectually, and in doing this podcast, I know that it's in the best interest of the Giants to just go ahead, rip that Band-Aid off,
right,
and let's get going for the future. That being said, I was at the game last Friday against the Mets.
Ooh, a pitcher's duel.
The pitcher's duel that was won in the 10th, 1-0 on a dropped fly ball.
That was brutal.
Especially if you're a Mets fan. It was, there was a different feel in the park that night. Now, there was a lot of Mets fans, but there was a buzz.
Luckily, they're all wearing orange, though. So,
but the blue gives them away. That Dodger blue.
Yeah,
gives
there's
them
a
away
different feel
because
there's actually Giants fans there that game. Been all year.
It was definitely more crowded than it had been in the previous games that I had been to. But there was a buzz. There was an excitement that I usually associate with pennant race baseball and playoff baseball, of which I've been a part of, you know, as a spectator of many pennant races. And
were you, was that the Syndergaard game or the DeGrom game? Syndergaard, right? That was the first game.
No, that was the second game. It was the DeGrom game.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Both
he was throwing gas.
Yeah, it was pretty unbelievable to watch. That guy is good. And his bullpen let him down again.
So what you're saying is there's a different
different feeling. There's a different level of excitement, a buzz inside the ballpark, electricity, if you will.
And you think that if they get rid of Bumgarner, that will all be deflated? Because, like, honestly, I don't think. Look, if this is Bumgarner 5 years ago, sure. But I mean, you know, he's a fine pitcher. But, I mean, he's not saving your season, right? You might as well. But he will be highest price.
He is definitely the best pitcher on the staff.
Sure.
He has the longest tenure of all the pitchers.
Right.
And he is. I don't think that trading Madison Bumgarner pulls the plug on the season, depending on what they get back from him.
Right.
I think it's still possible that the Giants probably at this point sit in one game above 500 going into going into this game today.
And tied, of course, with the D-backs at the same 53-52.
Right. As the Giants play 600 ball from this point in, they probably are really, really close to a wild card spot, if not in there. That's far more sustainable than they've had a phenomenal July. You referenced earlier, they've gone
17-5. Since
July 1st, if you go back.
Unless they win today.
If they go back a day early to start of the San Diego season on June 30th,
yeah,
they went 18-5.
It's true.
But
the bad news with that is that they still have the fourth worst run differential in the league at -41. And second worst third order record,
right?
426.
In terms of the improvement, though,
second worst
on June 30th.
To the Marlins.
June 30th, they're sitting at -89 in the run differential.
Okay, right. So okay, so again, so this is like a miraculous spurt.
It is,
and it only gets them to fourth worst. I mean, if there's no way they could continue this pace. I'm not saying they're not going to win few more games, maybe even finish over 500, but when you're 15.5 back at first place and you're really going to put all of your chips on a one game playoff for the wild card and then face the Dodgers in the first round, I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe the Giants more than any other team might be better suited to play the Dodgers in the first round because historically they've been very close games and
right, especially this season, the Giants have won more games against the Dodgers than anyone else in the West has.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I believe I've been to two of them. So yeah. Okay. So, but they've also greatly overachieved in one run and extra inning games, going 26-11 in those contests. But this is very eerily similar and reminiscent of the Mariners last year, which leads you to assume that a correction is coming, at least stat heads, right? And I know you're not going to want to hear this, but Baseball Prospectus playoff odds report came out just before the July 31st trade deadline. The Diamondbacks had a 31.1% chance of reaching the playoffs heading into Tuesday's action, while the Giants was 4.5%.
Yeah, no one likes the Giants. It gives them any sort of credit.
No, but this is all based on, you know, schedule, future ballpark, players individually. I think they do something like they take each individual player, they run them 10,000 times, and then combine that kind of thing. So,
right? No, I'm not disputing their methods or that the number that they came up with. I you know, 4.5. ultimately would agree with you. But there's something about baseball. There's something about this team that reminds me of 2010.
You see, and now this could be you could be your own worst enemies.
Right? Well, right. No, and totally, that's true. And this is,
were you guys playing 500 ball in 2010 at like a month after the All Star, or a week, 2 weeks after the All Star break? I doubt it. Now I don't remember because that's all PTSD for me. I pushed all that out of my head.
Well, that was the year that the Dodgers weren't very good.
Sure,
They weren't really
Frank McCourt years.
No, the race ultimately came down to the last day of the regular season, where they surpassed the Padres, who had a quite an epic choke in September. The Giants were able to come back from several games behind to win the division and ultimately win the World Series that year, and they did it with two guys you may have heard of, Madison Bumgarner and Buster Posey, who were in their rookie seasons. And they did it with a bunch of characters, cast-offs and misfits.
Right.
And this team seems to be cobbled together in a very similar fashion. There's a bunch of cast-offs and misfits and also-rans and people who disregarded by other teams, and the Giants picked up. They've done Farhan Zaidi has done a number of these seemingly small little roster moves here and there, and come up with some pretty amazing looking players.
Now, this feeling that you get, this could be real, or could it not also just be wistful blindness?
Oh, it is definitely wistful blindness. There's no, again, you asked me as a fan, my feelings. These are my feelings as a fan.
But you still didn't answer my question, though. What? What would you like to see happen right now? Be the pragmatist that I know you are.
Pragmatist.
Look at you. You're about to have a tumor right now.
It's not a tumor.
Sorry. Okay, I'm going to give you a second to think about that. D-backs general manager Mike Hazen, he doesn't sound too convinced. And look, he's in pretty much the exact same position as the Giants, but with better pitching. He says, quote, "The belief that a 500 team is going to win the World Series, get through the wild card format that we have, and win the World Series is, I don't think objectively that's a position we should be staking ourselves to." Now, that's... It's pretty brutal to just come out and straight up say it, but he's got a point. For all of this, for a one-game wild card, I mean, it would almost be easier if this new wild card format didn't exist, because then it would make these decisions a lot easier. You're 15 and a half out. You still have the Cubs, St. Louis, or Milwaukee to deal with, not to mention the D-backs in your own division, or the Giants, you know, however you want to look at it. It's going to throw them through a loop. And again, I hope the Giants don't trade anybody. But, you know, it seems pretty crazy that they wouldn't.
Yeah, no, what I would ultimately would love to see, best case scenario, is to get a extraordinary deal for one of their, you know, for either Bumgarner or Smith. Either one. Phenomenal deal. Can't say no to it.
Right.
Get a great prospect and, you know, maybe, you know, major league ready outfielder.
Yeah. I mean, look, those are the two best guys on the market. You should be able to get whatever you want.
You should. And especially because they had such an amazing July, that stock probably has risen.
Sure.
Now a little bit. That price went up. I think that if I know that the team believes that they can win, which is part of the equation. I think that if you get that amazing can't say no to this deal for one of those two players, do it. We've been talking about it all year. Do it. And then let's see what kind of magic is really left in this old team. and
no, I think it's this new team, because you guys started winning because all these guys.
Well, this new team, but they're younger than they were, but they still, you know, they still have got players that have been with the team for many, many years.
Right, and they don't really seem to be helping out too much, though. It seems like this young injection is doing all the heavy lifting, as far as I can tell.
It's a thing, but some bats have definitely woken up, and you know, overall the team is producing far better than it has been for the last 3 years.
100%. According to Baseball Prospectus and FanGraphs, they say the Giants are projected to go 28-32 the rest of the way and end up below 500. Of course, rendering them out of the postseason. Now, again, this is all just numbers. This is why they play the game. Anything can happen.
Yeah, and
who knows? As soon as this podcast ends, we're going to get the report. Will Smith traded to Minnesota, let's say.
Well, Minnesota, didn't they just pick up Sergio Romo?
Yeah, never mind. yes. Uh-oh, that's not good. Blue Jays just got Sogard. Diekman is now an A. Yeah. So, I mean, Holland is gone, so that should make you happy, right? Cubs got him. Dodgers got Tyler White. Everybody's bolstering up now. Giants haven't got anybody. So the fact that they haven't acquired anybody leads me to think, and the fact that Farhan Zaidi is no fool. Everybody was complaining that he didn't make any moves. Everybody's complaining right before. Now I think he's about to make some moves, and then people are going to be complaining also.
This is what he was hired for. He was hired to make this hard, unemotional decision
100%.
About what to do with this, you know, potentially future Hall of Famer.
Bruce Bochy?
Madison Bumgarner.
Oh. Now that's an interesting conversation.
Yes.
That is a very interesting conversation.
He's now been in the league for 10 years. He's won 3 World Series rings, has the lowest ERA in the World Series ever.
Lower than Babe Ruth?
Hmm. Yeah.
Reed.
Yeah, we talked about this at one point, I believe.
Well, Babe Ruth's consecutive scoreless inning streak and a pitcher in the World Series lasted way longer than his home run streak.
Right.
That ended in the early mid-2000s.
But it was a matter of a couple potential
Well, that's why I say it's interesting because, you know, his regular season career, he had a few years where he was super dominant, but never Cy Young Award winner, even MVP consideration, never anything like that. But postseason really comes alive. And that's kind of like a guy like Bernie Williams in my mind. Like, he gets to, you know, he's always talked about, should he be a Hall of Famer, should he not? His numbers, regular season numbers are good, not phenomenal, but his postseason numbers are insane. And so it's really interesting to think about that. Because I don't think you would do it the other way around. Like, a guy like Kershaw is a guaranteed lock already. And Trout also, already first-round ballot Hall of Famers, even though Trout's only been in, like, what, one postseason series. They lost. Kershaw's postseason record obviously isn't stellar. It's not awful, but it's just not Hall of Fame worthy. So can you pick and choose like that? Can you just look at postseason in terms of career Hall of Fame? Because without the postseason, Bumgarner, in my opinion, isn't a Hall of Famer. But with the postseason, it does make it a lot more interesting.
Well, it is. I don't know that you can necessarily pick and choose, but you have to look at the entire body of work, especially for a pitcher anyway, who is only going out there once every fifth game.
Right.
You know, and you know, a pitcher's individual performance, some of is affected with the quality of the team that he is on.
That's true.
And
if you're looking at wins,
so stuff, well, sure.
You can always
wins,
look at
but,
whip and FIP,
but people look at wins because for a long time, all of these whip and FIB and all of these advanced, all of these metrics that are new, didn't really exist. No one had thought of them before for 100 years
but
of baseball.
They exist now, and
so
they have to
look. So that helps someone, I think, a pitcher who, you know, hasn't been to a lot of postseasons, you know, and have that sort of, what did he never won a World Series? Yeah, but look at the team and right. Look at his numbers separated from that team.
Yeah.
You know, if the guy was playing for the Yankees, he would have won the World Series every year, but.
Well, I don't know. His ERA would have been a lot higher, though. He's not pitching at AT&T, you know.
Well, I mean, it's part. I'm not necessarily talking about any individual pitcher.
Oh, okay.
You know, just,
right.
You know, in general,
yeah.
That pitcher who has had a great career, pitches a dominant pitcher, but is on, say, a team like San Diego or the Marlins, sure. Or you know,
or Mike Trout with the Angels,
or you know? Mike Trout with yeah. with the Angels. He's a phenomenal right. player, possibly the best we've ever seen play the game, and he's on a team that really hasn't done much. They're around 500 almost every year, and really don't
seem
move
like
the needle
right.
one way or the other.
No,
and you can't call Trout a unsuccessful player because he's never made the postseason. It's not totally up to him. It's That's what makes it a team game played by individuals.
Okay, so yes or no, get rid of Bummy and Smith. I've given you enough time here. Oh. Well.
You know, I said it last week, last recording, last episode. I'll say it again. I think that it'd be best if they do that.
All right, you heard it. You heard it here first.
I will not be disappointed if in 5 days, come August 1st, that they both still are on the team. They decide to stay pat and just go for broke with what they have. You know, it's like, fine, do it. You know, but
that's true. It does seem like it's either way, you're probably going
to
win.
You know, we get to enjoy the last bit of Bumgarner, you know. Potentially, I mean, you know, what offseason will bring if he is traded versus he's not will look a lot different as well. So
now, could you imagine seeing Bumgarner in pinstripes in October? How sick, how physically ill would you be?
Well, as long as he's not Dodger blue, I think I'd be fine.
Yeah, I guess you're right. That's
especially if he was pitching against the Dodger blue. I think it would be. Something probably fun to watch. No love lost.
Yeah, I don't think so. But I'm sure he would like it, and I'm sure he would show up. All right, moving on. The Rays. How about the Rays? You know, obviously the horrible news about Blake Snell undergoing arthroscopic surgery to remove loose bodies in his pitching elbow. That's best case scenario for surgery, as far as I know. I mean, arthroscopic just means like with tools, right? They're not really cutting you, just small incision.
Right, small incision.
Get in there, get in, get
out.
Yeah, like a hernia surgery.
Yeah, they go in with a little camera and
yeah. Well, I don't know what the camera. And, really, the camera?
Scopic. Scope.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
oh, that makes sense.
Go in and see.
Gotcha.
But
I dropped out of med school. He's expected to miss at least 4 weeks. But the Rays, like the Brewers, aren't just giving up on their season. In fact, their odds of reaching the playoffs are 51.3%, and much higher than the Brewers. The Brewers are now at 32.4%. The reason being, I think the main reason being, that the Rays' schedule eases considerably in August. You know, after three games against the Red Sox, they're playing all teams with losing records. So the Marlins, Tigers, Blue Jays, Orioles. So it should be pretty nice for them. And as we just said, the Rays did just get who did they just get? Sogard.
Sorry, couldn't find it on your notes. But...
I award you no points.
Yeah, I can't. I got a lot going on today. The Twins make MLB history as the quickest to 200 home runs. Now we foreshadowed this before. I think anybody who's watching could have obviously predicted that they were going to do it. They were sitting at like 198 last week, but with Max Kepler's 27th home run and Minnesota batting around in the second inning Friday night, 6-2 victory, they did it. Kepler hit the record-setting home run off Dylan Cease. I don't know. I guess his name will always be associated with it,
sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting also, this when this happened, this broke the previous record set by the Rangers just a few years ago, and it
2005.
It did it by a fairly wide margin.
Yeah, it only took them 103 games. It took the Rangers 122.
Yeah, so 19 games less.
Now,
it's impressive.
Yeah, it's very impressive. What's more impressive, I think, is that the Twins lead MLB in home runs this season, but they also rank 27th in baseball in strikeouts. Now, that's pretty damn good. As the league strikeout numbers increase at a record pace, it's kind of nice to see the Twins' ability to have quality at-bats and crank it out. You would think that, you know, the sellout factor would be they would probably be leading in strikeouts or at least close, but they're actually near the bottom, which is very respectable.
And refreshing.
My boy Nelson Cruz getting three jacks by five innings that game also. Oh, actually, it was actually the game right after. But And then did you see? Now, I don't know if you saw the day after, of course, Mookie Betts doing something pretty remarkable. And it actually got me to think about this. Tell me if this sounds familiar here.
It's about a little boy in the hospital. I was wondering if you could do something to lift his spirits.
Sure, I can help you there.
Yeah, well, I promised him that you would hit him two home runs today.
See what?
Yeah, you know, a couple of dingers.
You promised a kid in the hospital that I'd hit two home runs.
Yeah, what, no good?
No, it's no good. It's terrible. I mean, you don't hit home runs like that. It's hard to hit home runs. And where the heck did you get two from?
Well, two is better than one.
That's ridiculous. Oh, I mean, I'm not a home run hitter.
Well, Babe Ruth did it.
He did not.
Oh, you're saying that Babe Ruth was a liar?
I'm not calling him a liar, but he wasn't stupid enough to promise two.
Well, maybe I did overextend myself.
How the heck did you get in here?
Cosmo Kramer.
Well, so Mookie Betts was entertaining Nico Sapienza, a 10-year-old from Massachusetts, as he was there as a guest of the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And what does he do? He goes up and hits three jacks. It's pretty damn good. But it was
he only promised the one, though.
Probably. Yeah, he's not a fool. But it instantly reminded me of that episode with Paul O'Neill. He's just so pissed.
Not even a home run hitter.
You call him Babe Ruth a liar? That was pretty epic. And Betts had three within four innings. So there was a good chance that we would see him be the 19th player of the four homer club there. Yeah, which
and been interesting. Cool. In the middle of Mookie Betts turned out to be three of four in a row, four consecutive days, four different players went hit three home runs in a game.
Who was the other one?
We had Cano.
Oh, that's right.
And Betts, Cruz, and
Paul O'Neill.
No, it wasn't Paul O'Neill, I don't think.
I know. I already forget. Was it one of the Hunters? Was it a Dozier or a Renfro? No, I don't think it was. It's pretty insane. And kind of like the four home run club also happened twice within the same week, the Sean Green one, and I always forget Carlos. It wasn't Delgado. He had it the year before. I don't know, but twice when somebody had hit four, happened in the same year. It happened, obviously, 2017 with JD Martinez against the Dodgers hit four, and then that was like a month after Scooter Gennett hit four also that same year, which is pretty strange. But man, those JD home runs at Dodger Stadium. And he went all over left field, right field, center. That was a hard game to watch. Anyway, well, he didn't get four, but he made a kid's dream come true, which is pretty damn cool, Mookie. Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Hoo-ah!
Granting wishes.
Yeah. You were giving me a bit of a... it was kind of like a tease. I didn't know what the hell you were talking about. You're talking about Atlantic League intrigue.
Yes, another Atlantic League intrigue this week.
That should just be like a segment. I think so,
it might be at this point.
Start a new podcast.
On 24th, on July 24th in the Atlantic League, a game involving the Long Island Ducks played a game with a new prototype baseball.
What?
Yes. Apparently, they're calling it the consistent grip ball.
I immediately recoil when I hear this. Okay, please explain.
So what's different about this ball is that it is the cover is treated with material to make it more tacky, and it will not be rubbed in mud. And what this will do is it will apparently make it easier for the pitchers and fielders to grip, and easier for the hitters to see, because it will be a whiter ball.
Ugh.
It'll be stickier and whiter.
Jesus. Is that necessary?
I don't know. I don't know if it is or not. I think it's bad news for the Mississippi Mud Commission.
So, that's really interesting. So, guys have been trying to get, do whatever they can to get a good grip on the ball forever.
They've got bottle caps
or spit or tobacco or pine tar.
They have the rosin bag right on the mound.
Yeah. But, so in that sense, maybe they might like that, but the whole ball being bright white, like that just seems awful for the pitchers. Even if the grip is a little bit better, you know, most pitchers want to scuff that ball up. They want to use the same ball as long as they, or at least that's how it used to be. Maybe it's not so much anymore. I don't know. Maybe guys like the new balls nowadays. There is a sea change happening.
I don't know. I think when there was a time I heard a story about why a pitcher would reject a brand new ball gets tossed to them, and they look at it, rub it, and then throw it back. I don't like that one.
Yeah.
You
don't see that as much.
Remember something would be an inconsistency with the stitching. That it would feel some would feel different than others, perhaps going to a machine doing the stitching rather than just by hand.
They're all done by hand.
What was the thing? But it's more consistent. You don't see it. You don't get as many as I don't like this one.
Well, I always thought that they just wanted the scuffed up ball, the ball that's the worst in the worst quality, right? The worst shape, like in the dead ball era. They're playing with like a black ball. You know, like those balls were rotting. You know, right, the pitchers would do whatever they could to keep it.
They used them because they're far more expensive.
Well, but the pitchers loved it because it's an advantage for the pitcher.
Absolutely.
You get a big white ball with bright red laces coming at you. I mean,
yeah, and now they throw away the ball as soon as it hits the dirt. They get a new ball out there.
Yeah, it's really weird.
You know, and a scuffed up ball will fly differently than than one that is not.
Right.
Which is another reason. I mean, the nail files and the Vaseline is of old.
Yeah.
To alter the flight of the ball.
Oh yeah, you put anything on there, it's going to restrict airflow. It's going to change the airflow, less aerodynamic. Yeah. So what they're trying to do is mitigate this by not letting them scuff up the ball at all, or maybe it's like scuff proof. Maybe the ball just repels right off of it.
I have no idea about that. What the article I read said was that the ball was just stickier to the hand.
Jeez, I mean, I kind of feel bad for this independent league. Like they're just being used as guinea pigs at this point.
But at a certain point, you got to try it out somewhere to see what's going to do.
Do you?
Well, you want to just say all of a sudden here use this new ball.
No, definitely not. That's what I'm saying. No new balls. How about that? How about no new balls? How about we just keep going the way we've been going for 100 years? I think it's been okay, but that is, I don't know, man. That's pretty weird.
Commissioner Manfred, we know you're listening. Go ahead and write in your thoughts.
Yeah, write in your gripes. That's fine with me. Okay, this is too weird.
Tell us why we need a new ball. What's wrong with the old one?
That was weird, wild stuff. I did not know that.
I personally don't like that. But I hope that's all the news from the Atlantic League intrigue for this week, because it seems like every week there's something else happening.
That's all I have for this week.
Good.
We'll see what happens next week.
Now, speaking of flame-throwing fastballs and pitchers, we generally seems to, not on purpose, but it seems like we almost always have some sort of short segment on Josh Hader and his dominance. just right. because it's he's playing video game baseball, basically. Like, it's insane.
He is. It is pretty insane. Turns out right now that he throws the fastball. Well, he gets his strikeouts. 50% of his strikeouts come on fastballs, which is the third highest rate ever.
Ever, not just this season, just
well,
ever.
I mean, since they started tracking, yeah.
Well, sure.
Wow. Not just this season, but since they started tracking such things.
That's ballsy. He just come up and hit this. I dare you.
Up and hit miss. The only other two other players that had this kind of stuff for a fastball in 2014, Aroldis Chapman, who 52.5% of his strikeouts came on the fastball.
2014 Chapman, yeah.
And 2012, Kimbrel at 50.2%.
Wow. Oh, what's Haters? 50 point what?
Just 50.
Oh, 50 even?
Yeah.
Wow. No, it's pretty remarkable.
So in the last episode, we were talking about spin rates.
Right.
And velocity and what that does to a ball. It turns out Hader's fastball is above average in terms of speed, but still ranked only 66th among major leaguers this year at average velocity of 95.9 miles per hour. And by comparison this year, Aroldis Chapman, 98.2 average velocity.
Yeah.
And he is sixth in the league.
But Hader's pitching way more than most closers. He's pitching four, five, six innings sometimes.
He is so much.
So, but that's pretty remarkable that it's that much lower and still that effective.
And now what's also interesting about this particular fastball is that the spin rate is below average
for
the league. The league average is 2,284 RPMs, and Hader throws his fastball at 2,158 RPMs.
That's kind of hard to believe, actually. That's insane.
Yeah, it is. And despite this, he's got a current whiff rate of 44%.
So that could almost prove that there's not even a lot of movement on his fastball, but it's just so dirty.
Well, no, it's
his slider is so dirty.
What the article was saying, that it has more movement. It has an exaggerated rise.
How
though,
with that low of a spin rate?
It has to do with the arm angle, the release point. The arm angle is he's coming more from the side than over the top, and that changes the direction of the spin and the way that the ball flies through the air.
That is pretty crazy. It makes you wonder what would happen if he did get like a higher spin rate coming from that arm angle.
Right? I don't know.
He's already one of the most dominant relief pitchers of all time, just in terms of stuff, not cumulative stats, but thus far in his career. It's just his strikeout rate is insane. So could we see him getting better? It almost seems like there's potential there that he can increase that spin rate, and it might
maybe
from that onslaught, he found the sweet spot kind of thing. Maybe
I think that's
don't monkey with it.
I think that's more to it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. He's found an arm slot, a delivery, that is for right now, making this pitch unhittable. He's probably not overthrowing it. He's got phenomenal control and getting a whole bunch of swing and misses. 44% of the time, he's getting a swing and miss on a fastball.
That's insane. That's like, that's kind of like Andrew Miller a few years ago. Like his postseason stretch there was just, he was just unhittable.
Yeah.
Couldn't hit him.
And it happens. And whatever it is, the ball flies differently.
Now, speaking of balls flying, the netting, the extension of nets all the way down to foul pole after somebody else gets hit and killed. I mean, somebody already died this year at Dodger Stadium. And then there's like that 4-year-old girl that got rocked. think she's fine, but I had to go to the hospital. You know, anyway, it's pretty bad. And now a lot of people are coming out. I mean, Almora Lindor was just quoted as saying, "I encourage every MLB team to put the nets all the way down to the foul pole. I know it's all about the fans' experience to interact with the players. I completely get that. You want to have that interaction with the players, getting autographs and stuff. But at the end of the day, we want to make sure everybody comes out of the game healthy. We've got to do something about it." Bellinger came out and agreed. And in fact, the White Sox, the Nationals, and the Dodgers said they will extend the netting to the foul poles by the end of this season.
Well, by the end of the season, yeah. Not even before the beginning
the
of
the White
next.
Sox had announced it before the season even started. They said by summer they were going to have it done. Now, to my knowledge, no team has done it all the way yet. And I think I wouldn't be surprised if they wait till the end of the season and do a lot more research on it. But it seems like it's coming. Like, it seems like this is inevitable and everybody's just going to have to do it.
The end of the fly ball souvenir in the outfield corners.
It's tough, man. Yeah. It does seem like it's happening more, and maybe it's because it's obviously guys are throwing harder and guys are hitting harder than maybe they ever have before. Maybe, but also maybe just the amount of pitchers that come in, like these one batter specialty guys, and they're going to get a lot more foul balls. Maybe there's just more. It does seem like there's been a spike in injuries because, you know, five years ago, oh, hell, even a year ago, I would have said, get the fuck out of here. Come on. Like, let's watch the game, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, now the games are twice as long as they were 70 years ago, right? They used to average an hour and 40 minutes. Now they're over 3 hours. You know, people are on their phones.
Now,
again, my initial response is, yeah, well, that's social Darwinism, all right? Why don't go to a ball game when you're in the danger zone and not pay attention. But I think the point people are making is that even if you are paying attention, doesn't matter. I mean, you're still going to get hurt.
There's an ugly finder coming your way.
Yeah. Now, I bring a glove, even though I feel kind of weird bringing a glove as a grown man to a game. But if I'm sitting down on the lower level, I'm bringing a glove.
Well, especially at a place like AT&T Park where the sitting so close relative to some of the other stadiums
right.
out there.
Yeah, A's, I feel like you're kind of safe at the Coliseum. Dodger Stadium, they did move it in a little closer now. Right. And those seats are really low. You know, there's some seats right there, like right there. You can just get rocked.
Right. Well, I remember sitting in stands many times, lower deck in Arizona at was it Chase Field?
Yeah.
At the time, it was Bank One Ballpark, but it's just interesting perspective looking across diamond. I had a friend who had seats that were basically right behind third base or. You know, nice. It's just, you know, about 12, 14 rows up from the field. Phenomenal seats. Looking across the way behind first base, and there'd be a foul ball. It would be interesting to watch the crowd as it entered the stands. They almost split the parting of the Red Seas. Right. It would just open up, and then the ball would donk against, like, someone who had just moved out of the way, hit the back of the seat, and bounced back out. But, it showed that people were watching the ball and where it was going, and everyone was able to get out of the way.
This was pre-iPhone, I'm assuming. This is pre-2008?
Yes.
A lot's happened since then.
It's true, a lot's happened then, but...
No, I agree. Watch the game. Pay attention, all right? And... You know, some people are saying, oh, well, maybe kids under 18 shouldn't even be allowed on those lower levels. Like, I don't think it's that serious. But at the same time, like, just speaking from fantasy purposes and my own personal agenda, when guys like Almora or Lindor or Bellinger, like, they hit a kid, that's going to mess with their heads, man.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine that it wouldn't. It would definitely be a...
Lindor said it himself. He said after that, because that was like in the third inning, he was like, I was just trying anything I could to just fly it into the field, like basically into fair territory. It was almost like he just didn't want to get a foul so bad that he kind of didn't...
didn't
really
swing.
Care. I mean, right. That was probably just for one game or so, maybe two, the mental aspect. But I don't want to see these guys mentally impaired because they're afraid that they're going to murk somebody.
Times change from Little League when you hit the foul ball and it went off and it broke a car windshield that was parked out there.
No, that's me at golfing. That's So I don't know, Matt. It's really strange because, again, even a year ago, I would have told you to go blow it up your ass. Like, we're not having the Nets. And I did have the luxury of going to a Japanese game in Japan.
Right, obviously, where they have
this
the Nets.
Year, where they had the Nets. And it didn't seem to encumber my vision. And I was sitting on the third base side, about 50 rows up. Yeah. It didn't seem too bad, especially at night. Maybe a day game might be a little worse because it's harder to see through it. But at night, at least, like with the house lights and everything, it didn't seem like a big deal. Now, the lack of souvenirs is kind of a bummer. But, you know, maybe they could have something like a retractable net for each inning so that the guys can still chuck the ball into the stands, you know? I mean, because getting rid of that would be, I mean, that'd be a shame. Now, getting rid of that over somebody dying every year, I mean, I guess you can't really put a price on that, but... I don't know. I've never had a close call. I've never really been fortunate enough to have seats that are that low, usually, unless it's the Coliseum. I think right. The Coliseum's the place where I've had the best seats ever.
I've sat pretty close back in the Candlestick days.
No close calls for you?
No close calls today, but I did. It was a Giants-Dodgers game at Candlestick, and I was back... couldn't necessarily tell you the year, but Brett Butler was playing for the Dodgers at the time. Tommy Lasorda was definitely still the manager.
Oh, yeah.
I was down there, was sitting right next to the Dodgers dugout, the third base side, and like two, three rows back from the railing there at Candlestick. And, you know, I between innings, you know, I went down, tried to get Brett Butler's autograph. It was a year before he was with the Giants. And at one point, a foul ball came to the Dodgers third base coach. I asked for the ball and he tossed me the ball, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But, with that screen would have been there. I wouldn't have gotten that ball.
Definitely not.
I had a interaction with Brett Butler. I said, you know, you were one of my favorite players when you were, you know, with the team last year. I was wondering if you would sign my baseball card. I had a Brett Butler baseball card with me, and he said, I will after the game. I said, okay. At that point, the game was like, it was the fifth inning, and the Dodgers were winning, like,
he gave
like
you a line.
8-4, and the Giants came back to win that game,
really?
And he left directly from center field out to the player's exit. So it's like he never even came back. But
nothing for you.
So in my experience, the players don't give out autographs during the game. You got to get their thing, and there'll probably be gaps in the fence to be able to like pass a pen and baseball card or ball through the through there. But
So ESPN did a survey and it appears that the fans are overwhelmingly in favor of backing more safety netting. It was conducted last week by Hart Research Associates and found that fans agreed by a margin of 78% to 22% that netting to foul poles is a good idea. So I think we'll see it.
I mean, it might be
next year, and maybe that's part of the $100 million renovation plan. I'm sure. Probably,
I'm sure that factors into it.
Now that brings us to this week's Ig Nobel Award of the Week.
The Ig Nobel Award of the Week. I think we had a couple candidates this week, but I think the winner this time is the Cubs bullpen.
Ooh, Kimbrel, we're looking at you, buddy.
In the Cubs in the month of July have blown 8 saves, which is the most in the National League and tied for the most in the Major League.
Ouch.
Good
timing either.
No, during this time that they've blown all these games, they happen to slip out of first place in the Central Division.
Oh, yeah.
And
to their biggest rival, no less.
Right. So yeah, that's way to go, Cubs. Way to go, Cubbies.
Yeah, well, technically they came out of first with Goldschmidt's fifth home run in his fifth day. Now he now has six in 6 days. We'll see what today brings.
Yeah.
But that put the Cardinals atop the National League Central. One game.
It's not a tumor.
What?
It's not a tumor.
Wow,
but we should have the results of Goldschmidt's day. They look like they've finished playing in Miami.
Miami? What are you talking about? No, they're home. They're playing against the
Goldschmidt,
Astros.
I'm still thinking that Goldschmidt is with Arizona. What am I thinking?
We got the baseball TV up here, boy. But he's pointing at the wrong one.
I am.
So that's the first time the Cardinals have had sole possession of first place in their division this late in the season since October 3rd, 2015.
Really?
Yeah. So they are a perennial threat, but usually... Oh, is that Goldschmidt on base right there? Just as you told me to put it on? It looks like there's only one run right now, so I don't know. It's probably not him. But yeah, so that's that, and then of course Kimbrel last night, Saturday night, gives up the lead in extras after a great start by John Lester. Did great for my team. Luckily, we don't do wins or losses because that would have been a tough one. You know,
right.
Seven scoreless innings. Hey, yeah, I mean I think that's well deserved.
All right.
Trivia.
Trivia.
Are we?
Well,
there?
We have one from last week to answer.
Ooh.
For sure.
Last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question. Who was the highest single season WAR by a shortstop in Padres history? The minimum of 50% starts at shortstop.
What San Diego Padres shortstop has the highest single season WAR?
Right. Now, did we get any...
We did, actually.
I dropped a big hint before I asked this question. I did.
Huh.
I think
this is a tough one.
It is tough. It made you think the answer actually surprised me, which is why I picked it as our trivia question last episode. But
all right,
guess? What are the guesses?
Mikey Villanueva in Huntington Beach says Khalil Green.
Khalil Green.
That's a good guess, actually.
It is a good guess. He was a very good shortstop for several years.
Let me look it up here.
For
so
the
yes.
Padres.
Yeah,
but,
Green, he did have two seasons with a WAR above 3 in 2004 and 2007, but those proved to be his best and is not 5. You said you didn't say 5.
I didn't say 5, but yes, this particular player did have a 5.1
WAR. I cheated.
You took a look. Yeah.
But that's it though, right? 5 is the mark.
5.1, yeah.
5.1. So it's not like an extremely high mark.
No,
but it's
good for a single season,
sure.
And at a position like shortstop where there's a
right.
lot of opportunity for
errors. Yeah, and 3, I mean, 3 is pretty good there. And Khalil did it twice. No winners. Let's see. We got Barry Maguire in San Anselmo.
Barry Maguire.
I don't know if that's real, but
I don't know. It would be more rare than Jerry Maguire.
Maybe
Maguire.
It is. Look, if your name's
know.
Barry Maguire, you know, you were probably bored before the 1990.
Show me the money.
Or whatever the hell. Yeah.
Show me the money.
Way before Cuba. Barry says, this may be cheating, but what did he say? This may be cheating, but I'm the rest of this season. I guess the typo. But I'm the rest of the season and saying Fernando Tatis Jr. Now, that's funny because that's what I said
right.
when you brought it up. And I thought maybe I gave it away. I thought maybe it was like a trick question because it's all-time San Diego Padres. And he's obviously a rookie this year.
Right.
But I don't know what the hell he means by that. But I think he means
that
by the end of this season, he might have.
What
he
is
might be
what
the
is Tatis's WAR? As it currently stands,
currently
roughly 50.
Is at 3.4, so he's actually already better than Khalil Green in his best season. Khalil had 3.5 in 2007.
Okay,
yeah.
So he's almost there, and he's got roughly 2 months to raise it another 2 points.
Sure, No, probably not possible, but you never know. Now, I was, before I cheated and looked, I was thinking somebody like Gary Templeton or something. Somebody like a perennial guy from like the 80s or something. Sure. And then I looked it up, and he did have a 3.2 WAR in 85, but that does not cut it. And a 4.5 WAR with St. Louis, but
yeah.
I don't think that's enough.
Well, my, it's not. Do you have another guess? So
that no. All right. I think we exhausted all the Padres shortstop.
So my hint. We're just before this. Gave the question last episode. We were talking about the year 1980, and that is pivotal to the answer to this question. Who was the shortstop for the San Diego Padres in 1980? It's nothing, no other than the Wizard himself, Ozzie Smith.
I can't believe it. I don't
know. Ozzie Smith, who remembers that?
Never
Ozzie
would have
Smith
thought that yet.
Played for the Padres for three seasons before he was traded to the Cardinals, where he became a Hall of Famer.
Right. That's what I think of him as right. wearing a red hat, not yeah. a brown hat. It's interesting, and he—it's gonna.
To be fair, it was before your time, but
well, yeah. But the fact that he is the best Padres shortstop of all time, and he was just
one of the best
brief stint. That's true.
To his credit, he is one of the best shortstops of all time. So
that's true.
Stands to reason that he would be the best Padres shortstop.
Now, possibly, if they let Machado be shortstop, he may have it. But I think Machado's best season is like six anyway, so it's probably not.
Well, maybe. But again, this is a minimum of 50%
right.
of the starts at shortstop.
I have a feeling Fernando Tatis Jr. will do it. Maybe not this year, but he will get over a 5. What was it, 5.5 you said?
5.1. Ozzie Smith, 5.1
That's
WAR.
That's very respectable. Very respectable, but definitely surpassable, though, I would say.
Yeah.
Alrighty, this week's trivia question. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. What do you got for me?
I got... Alright. So, only one position player in the history of Major League Baseball has recorded a save. Who is that one person?
Say that again?
One position player in the history of Major League Baseball has recorded a save, a non-pitcher.
Really?
Recorded a save for the...
It's only happened once?
It's only happened once.
Now, what about... Is this a trick question? Because what about when Romo played third for a little bit, and then he came in and he closed out the game. Does that count?
That would have been a
remember
pitch,
that
would have been a pitcher playing.
Well,
a,
he was a third
a,
baseman
a position,
for a couple outs.
Thing, yeah.
He was a third baseman for an inning.
He's
So no, it's not
Robo. The pitcher in question would not be considered a pitcher in any sort of
the
situation.
Player in question is not a pitcher.
The player in question
but he
is
pitched.
Is not a pitcher.
All right.
And
this
that would be considered a pitcher.
This
by
should be
any
an easy one.
Thing.
It should be easy. It's only one guy.
It should be. It's
and
only
it's
one
probably
guy.
Probably recent, but maybe not.
We don't know that.
Could be Jimmy Fox or somebody. Yeah. Well, he's look, the guy had like 100 innings or something like that. So, all right. But this, I guess the whole thing is usually a guy's coming in to pitch. It's a blowout, and it's not a save opportunity. Okay. All right. Yeah. Interesting. baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. That's it. That's hot today. It's always hot when we do this show.
It is.
From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.